Welcome to Inner Healers, a radio show dedicated to bridging science and spirituality by sharing the latest news on integrative health and overall well-being from a spiritual standpoint. With producer and host Luciana Stiglich, your weekly journey to remembering you can heal from within, you are an inner healer, starts right here, right now.
Everybody, welcome to Inner Healers, a radio show dedicated to bridge science and spirituality from a healthy standpoint. This show is aired via Blog Talk Radio and shared as a podcast for latest replay on Spotify. Our topic for today is dealing with the anxiety in your expectations, and our guest is Jack Elias, who you may remember from previous enlightening shows. Jack is a master certified clinical transpersonal hypnotherapist, author, counselor, coach, NLP trainer, and director of the Institute of Therapeutic Learnings in the US, who has been working with clients for the past 30 years. Having unrealistic expectations about the self can contribute to increased feelings of anxiety, dissatisfaction, and difficulty coping with sickness symptoms. Having expectations is usually the result of trying to live up to an internal ideal, which can also be motivated by fear, such as worrying about how others perceive you. These beliefs and self-doubts can contribute to avoidance behaviors, loneliness and isolation, and even depression. Having high expectations is often associated with negative thinking. For example, you may jump to conclusions and assume that others won't accept you if they knew about A, B, or C things about yourself that you have not reconciled with. Perhaps thoughts of self-blame have you believing that it's your own fault that you cannot achieve the standards you've set out for yourself. Negative thinking and high expectations can deplete your self-worth and make you feel unsuccessful. If these words resonate with you, this show is made for you and because of you. I hope it can be a light for your path. Nike has a phrase that has become very popular. Just do it. This is a phrase you can tell yourself whenever you are feeling anxious, as it can help you get past your current state and start calming anxiety by being proactive. Another thing you can tell yourself is, anxiety may be uncomfortable, but it is not dangerous. In this way, you can remind yourself that although anxiety is unpleasant, you're in no physical danger when your emotions start taking over. And one last thing you can tell yourself is, I am grateful for, and start listing as many things you can be grateful for in this present moment. This will help you because your brain can't experience stress and gratitude at the same time, so it is a great way to shift your frequency back into alignment.
And to talk about this today, we have a guest that probably you remember from a previous show. His name is Jack Elias, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself. Hi, Jack. Good morning. Thank you for being here today.
So glad to be back. Thank you. So the first thing is I'm old. I'm very old, so I have a lot of experience. Learned from my mistakes. And I, you know, through my life, I've had a lot of occasions to deal with these issues and challenges. So I think I have some really valuable information to share. I've been a hypnotherapist, NLP practitioner, life coach for 34 years. I've been training people, certifying people as transpersonal hypnotherapists for 34 years. And that's ongoing now in spite of COVID because it's a virtual program. You can join anytime. Currently, there's about 22 people, all international students all over the world studying together, practicing together. So it's a really great program. And live Zoom tutorials with me as part of it. So it's very dynamic, a lot of support. So, and I also work individually with people all over the world.
That's amazing. That's a huge curriculum. So now that we're talking about huge things, what about huge expectations? You know, let's tell our listeners, what is an expectation? How is it that we end up having expectations? What do we understand by the word expectations?
Okay, that's a great question. So pretty much everything we're going to talk about or in our life experience is twofold. There's the sane version and the insane version. So sane expectations are more like a spontaneous aspiration or vision that comes from your genuine self, from your genuine being. It's just a natural expression of yourself. Like we're naturally motivated to manifest what is natural to us. And that's how we start out as little children. As little children, we're unselfconsciously, we're just going yahoo all the time, you know, just expressing exuberance unselfconsciously. That's our true self. And that never goes away. But it gets repressed. It gets repressed in family systems. It gets repressed in society. All kinds of threatening, intimidating messages, especially when we're little, cause us to learn how to hold it down. Now, when we can't simply hold down our natural joyful self because we forget. And so then we go yahoo again, then we get hit again. So we learn, that happens a little, and then we learn the way to keep it down is that when we put it down, we substitute, like on top of it, say, like, this is the barrier. And on top of the barrier, to keep the barrier in place, we start building our false self. And our false self is not really a self, it's an act. We start acting the way the people who are hurting us and threatening us or just being very strict with us, we're behaving the way they want us to. And that becomes, that's acting, but we identify with it as who we are. But it's really an act, how we act. Our persona is an act. And we've forgotten it's an act, which is why we get trapped in it. Because when you think it's a thing, it's what you are, inescapable. But when you realize it's just acting, you can change your act. So this false sense of self, this persona, which is an act, is based on repressing our true joy, our true inspiration, and substituting what they want. So underneath the barrier is our naturally forming interests and expectations, but that's being repressed. So part of the act of our false self is creating false expectations that we believe if we accomplish them will please these people. That's formulated, that way of thinking, that paradigm is formulated in childhood. But then as we move along, we forget it. We forget that that's the formulation. We forget that that's the setup. And we start thinking that these expectations are true expectations. And if, you know, the disadvantage of having a very creative, smart brain is that once your very creative, smart brain comes online, which is about around the age of 7, you start having a cognitive faculty, so you can relate in a more intelligent way with the world. But you start, because that program is already preset, when your cognitive faculty comes on, it buys in to everything in the false self. So you have false expectations. If you have a smart, creative brain, you can succeed at those expectations. But then you find out when you succeed, it doesn't help. You still feel empty inside. And because if you're really smart and creative, you can do that again and again. You go, well, this will work, and it didn't work. Well, then this will work, and it didn't. And then this will work. And pretty soon, your own intelligent creative ability becomes your worst enemy, because you develop a very powerful conviction that nothing's going to work. And when that, at that point, people typically go into despair, they go into compulsions, addictions, or they kill themselves. So the thing is, you want to take the time to examine your expectations, your motivations. And are they from my false self, my conditioned self, that's been put in place to repress my true interests? What just popped into my mind as an example. Many times in working with people over the last 3 decades, I've had people, you know, they come in, they're successful lawyers, say, but they say, you know, I really wanted to be an artist, but my father was an attorney and my mother was an attorney, and that, you know, they expected me to be an attorney. There was never any doubt, never any question. But really, I find no joy in it. I really wish I could be an artist.
So do these expectations we're talking about, which are basically the basis upon we create our lives for ourselves, right? Do these have to do with specific attachments in love while we are developing our childhood needs?
Yes. The false expectations, it's like this: the false self, its prime motivation is to please the authority figures. Because when you please them, then they make you worthy, they take, you know, give you some kind of support as opposed to punishing you. So those expectations are all about pleasing the outside authority. Like I said before, when we grow up, we lose awareness that we're acting for an audience of outside authority, because we internalize it. We have a self-critic. We don't realize that self-critic is not our own true thought. It's the internalization of those big people and their criticism when we were little, that we accepted without question because we didn't have a cognitive faculty to analyze it and recognize that it was unfair or false or just mean. We just, you know, when we're a little child, they're gods. Whatever they say is the truth of the universe. We don't understand they could be confused. Little children before the age of 7 don't understand that their parents or any adults have inner lives. They're just like these big mysterious beings. So anything they say, we absorb because we don't have a cognitive analytical faculty to filter it. And then when we do get that faculty, it's on top of all the habitual delusions that have already been indoctrinated. So, and we have a big prohibition against going down with our critical faculty. You know, many people say, you know, I'm afraid of what I'll find if I look inside. That's all the indoctrination you get, that you're worthless, you're no good inside, So we cover that over and we don't want to look there. If we look there, and when we look there, then we can start recognizing to throw it away, that it was just insanity from the big people.
And how is that this insanity from these big people and these very high expectations, sometimes unrealistic expectations, in a way contribute to experiencing anxiety?
Excellent question. False expectations, the expectations of your false self, are infused with fear, because your false self is fearful self, because it's all of its agendas are about pleasing them, hope that I please them, fear that I don't. So that hope and fear infuses everything you think about. So when you have expectations, your motivation for the expectation is, if I accomplish this, they'll love me. But it's an if. So it's a fearful expectation. True expectations from your heart, you have no fear. It's a joy just going for it. And if it doesn't work out, you might feel sad, but you don't feel afraid, because you're still connected to your joyful being. And you go, well, that didn't work out, I'll try this.
Which is interesting, because when we are children, we need our authority figures, our parents, any parental figure to help us survive, right? So we do seek attention and we seek love because we want them to help us survive.
Right.
So it is like a necessity, right? And then when we grow up, we have acquired all of these like habits, and we still sometimes believe that these are still what keep us living. And we have to do this process of not only healing, but also leaving behind all of these belief systems that no longer serve our highest purpose. So with this, we have to leave behind some high expectations that maybe were important at a time even, but not necessarily now. So what can we tell our listeners about this process of growing up and letting go?
Right. Okay. So the thing is, when we're in our false self, which is all about getting approval, we make everything personal. Like, we think that, you know, it's important to have expectations to get along in the world. But it's not personal about you. The expectations, you want to take yourself out of the spotlight. Like, we expect you to be the way we tell you to be. And recognize it's fine to have expectations about activity. It's fine to pay attention to the laws of cause and effect. So that if you're entering a new situation, you gather information and you start forming expectations about how it might work out or what you could do to ensure that it works out better. But it's that, it's not me. You don't enter a situation, is this situation going to prove I'm unworthy? Or, I hope it proves I'm worthy. That, take it personal, that's delusion. But it's fine, because when people hear some of the things I've already said, they might have a reaction like, oh, so I'm not supposed to have expectations? Oh, so I'm not supposed to care about this or that? No, you care about things in an appropriate way. And the appropriate way is recognizing everything operates according to the laws of cause and effect. So you want to engage the world intelligently according to the laws of cause and effect. Engaging the world with self-conscious, anxious concern is not a good way to proceed. Because in the realm of causality, it only causes pain and chaos. So if you have a goal, like, I'd like to accomplish that, then the same thing to do is recognize, like being a farmer. If you want to grow apple trees, you plant your apple seeds, you take care of the earth, you water, you do the things according to the laws of nature that will make it grow and produce apples. You don't plant the seed and then come back in 3 days and say, nothing's happened yet. Maybe I should get the dirt out of the way and then it'll grow better. Or maybe I should pull it out and examine and make sure, you know, nothing will ever, you know. That's what we do with ourself. If you want to accomplish something, it has nothing to do with what you think about yourself. It has everything to do with the laws of causality that are relevant for the thing to germinate, grow, and bear fruit. Nothing to do with yourself.
And when we are having an anxiety moment because we realize that we want this and we haven't been able to get this, and we start questioning ourselves, and we start, you know, we go over and over and over all the reasons why we wanted this and we couldn't do this and we couldn't get this. And this, of course, makes us more and more and more anxious.
Yeah.
So what can we tell our listeners that may be going through something like this about how to stop this? First of all,
okay,
how to stop this?
That's an excellent question. How to stop it? Because when you say how to stop it, that implies you have started it. And that's what people need to remember. Anxiety is not something that comes and gets you. There's no such thing as anxiety. The feeling we call anxiety is the byproduct of activity that we do. We have to do the activity or the feeling won't be there. So we are the creator of anxiety. Now, one of the main things that makes it unnecessarily difficult for people to change is that they relate to these things moralistically. Like all of those self-talk things you said, like I want it, what's wrong with me, all that. Again, that puts the focus on this false idea of self, as if understanding something about your false self is going to make what you want manifest, as opposed to recognizing it's only going to manifest if you do the proper steps according to the laws of cause and effect. And worrying about yourself, generating anxiety, those aren't ever part of the equation. They're always an energy drain. But don't be moralistic about it. Understand it scientifically. Again, according to cause and effect. And it's very simple. All activity, any activity, requires energy and attention. Just think, can you do any activity without energy and attention? No. Simple. Plus, any activity that you are generating, which means you're applying energy and attention, that energy and attention is not available for another activity. Simple. You know, try putting your makeup on while you cook a fancy omelet. See how that goes. So, to continue with that metaphor, generating, you know, first of all, people are so habituated to it, they think fearful thinking and anxiety thinking, they think it's their friend. They think they need it. No, it's never your friend. It's always an energy drain. And I don't mean that moralistically. I mean it scientifically. It's an activity. Any energy and attention you put into fearful thoughts, generating fearful emotions, anxious thoughts, generating anxious emotions, that's energy and attention that's not available to actually do the thing you want to do. So it's like in the metaphor, generating anxiety and fear is like putting your makeup on while you're trying to cook a fancy omelet. It's just not going to help. But someone might say, well, this is the way my mom always did it. She always put her makeup on while she was cooking the omelets. And she said, well, how were the omelets? Oh, they were terrible. She never got it right. She always burned them, or she forgot the salt, or she or she dropped her lipstick into the eggs. So the key for your listeners, our listeners, the key is to take time to be more interested in your mind, so that you notice you create these feelings by how you think. And how you think at this point is habitual, is that your thoughts are habitual because they're tied to a habitual belief. So one way, there's several ways to approach it. One is to just practice looking at anxiety or fearful thinking, and just looking, and practice not being sucked into it. Just recognizing fearful thoughts, fearful feelings, and just intentionally let the body is a great tool. You practice relaxing the body and breathing as you observe the anxious thoughts and anxious feelings. Just that's one very powerful practice, but you have to develop it. Practice makes perfect. So when you do that and you develop a stability in that, you start to, you recognize anxious thoughts, anxious feelings, fearful thoughts, fearful feelings. They're just activity. They're like birds flying across the sky. You know, if you see a flock of birds flying across the sky, you go, oh, flock of birds, I'm so unworthy. Because it's very easy to recognize they're not about you. So when you practice relaxing the body and staying with the breath, and you clear your vision and your intelligence, and you recognize they're just passing thoughts and feelings. They're not about me. Even if they have the word I, me, or my in it, they're still not about me. I, me, and my just sounds. Just because you hear I, me, or my, or your name even. Your name is just a sound. You're not in your name. You don't have to respond with old habitual patterns when you hear that sound, but that's what everybody does. Because remember, when you formulate the false self, that false self is intensely, habitually tied to your name, because they're always calling you, Jack, get over here, Jack, do this, you know. So you hear your name and it immediately triggers all those fearful patterns from childhood, but you've forgotten that's what's happening. You think it has to do with present time. So when you start developing the space of awareness with the anxious and fearful thoughts, you start to also recognize they don't have anything to do with present time. These aren't my thoughts and my feelings. These are that four-year-old's thoughts and feelings. And of course he felt that way. Of course he thought that way. He was just 4 years old. He couldn't, had no way to deal with what they were doing. And the change that that makes is that when you have fearful thoughts and fearful feelings and just get sucked into them, you put yourself down. You hate yourself for having them. You get frustrated. You get more negativity. But when you develop that space and you see them and develop the clarity to not only see that they have nothing to do with you, but they're actually the thoughts and feelings of that little child, and that you're tuning in to those habitual patterns, then you have compassion for that child. So the best thing to do with your anxiety feelings and fearful feelings and thoughts is not fight them, not hate them. Develop the awareness that that's the little harmed little child calling out to you, and respond with compassion. And then you have instantly freed yourself, because the anxiety and fear are not your problem. They're that little harmed child that's just a bundle of habits now. It doesn't really exist anymore, but the habits are there. They're activated. So metaphorically, it's useful to regard that as, I'm sure you've all heard the term inner child. So embrace the inner child, love the inner child. Say, listen, it's fine. You don't have to handle this. Of course you're afraid. You're just four. You don't know how to handle it, but I know how to handle it, because you stay connected to your adult mind instead of hypnotizing yourself to regress into the child mind. Anytime people are experiencing emotional turmoil, understand, anytime you're experiencing emotional turmoil, you have regressed yourself into the mind state and psychology of a little child. You don't realize you're all master hypnotists. You're just misusing your ability.
Which is very interesting, right? What you say, because when we are able to auto-distance ourselves from what we are experiencing, then we can realize that much of it is a projection, as you said.
All of it.
Past childhood experiences or past experiences. And then while doing this, you know, when we project these experiences onto what's happening, we take the conflict that we have inside onto the exterior. And so we create conflict, which is something we're trying to avoid, because of course we are all trying to avoid pain. Now, you have written this amazing book. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about this. It has to do with anxiety and stress and how expectations trigger anxiety and stress. And you also talk about this three key insights on gaining clarity about expectations. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
I'm sure I can.
Your book is called The Outrageous Guide to Being Fully Alive.
And the subtitle is Defeat Your Inner Trolls and Reclaim Your Sense of Humor.
Yes, so this book has to do, as we were telling our audience, has to do with anxiety and stress and these expectations that are, as you were saying, expectations not from our sane part, but from our not sane part.
Right.
So these expectations trigger anxiety, as we were telling our listeners, and also stress. So can we tell our listeners a little bit about your book? Congratulations, yeah. By the way, on finally having it published.
Yes. So, and by the way, I assume Amazon is in Peru. It's available in the paperback and also as an ebook.
It's been going on for 10 years, so we have listeners from all around the world. So,
Right. So
it's going to be amazing for all our listeners who can read in English.
Yes.
Get your book and listen to what we're telling about this book today.
Okay, so Luciana's question is about the very beginning of the book, about how to deal with high expectations. And the three insights, I'll just name them first, is confusion about ownership, confusion about adulthood, and confusion about performance. So confusion about ownership, they're all just aspects of one thing. We are habituated to think that everything is separate from everything else, but everything is interdependent, like facets on a gem. They're not separate all over the place. It's one gem, different facets. If you hold it one way, you see mainly one facet. You turn it another way, you see mainly another facet. But you're getting the entire quality of the gem. Or same thing if it's a piece of coal. We'll say the insanity is a piece of coal and the gem is your true self. So whichever side you look at, it's you're getting the whole piece of coal. So confusion about ownership is that this false self, it's formed because the child has no choice but to have a felt sense that these gods own me. They own my life. They own anything I do. So they own my efforts and my creations, which is why another way of understanding why there's plenty of fear. It's theirs, it's not mine. So I'm always on unsolid ground. You know, what if I get halfway there and they change their mind and say, no, you have to do that. You know, that happens a lot, not so much maybe with in a big expectation, like to be a lawyer, like that will maybe be pretty constant. But one of the insidious ways that parents really harm their child is all these little ways that they give them little tasks to do and then demonstrate that they're unhappy with it. And you've disappointed me. I thought you would make your bed better than that. You know, thousands of little daggers, little heartbreaks. But for a child, no heartbreak is little. It's intense. And so children have to learn how to numb out the constant heartbreaks. And that's how you do it. Children learn that they have hypnotic power. They learn that they can escape from the heartbreak by manipulating their musculature, their breath. And as they develop the ability to think, they discover they can get lost in thought and totally be numb to the body. And so they passionately develop all of those things to get rid of the pain. Unfortunately, all of those processes are what I call reverse yoga. Yoga, as you all know, is about unifying. The word yoga means unify or unity. A child is born completely yogic, completely whole. They learn to fragment to escape the pain. And then as an adult, if you have the good fortune to have the motivation and interest to regain your actual full self, that's when you start doing the yoga of bringing your parts back together. So they don't own you. Nobody owns you. If you understand nobody owns you, nobody owns your life. It's like mind your own business. you have your own life to attend to, then that takes away a lot of the diluted perspectives that generate fear and anxiety. Now, the second one, because I haven't memorized the book, I have to. You should all read it so many times that you memorize everything. So the second one is, I'm going to turn the page here, confusion about adulthood. When we're having emotional turmoil, as we said before, we are in a regress state, acting with this psychology in the trance of the psychology of that young frightened child, with all the diluted perspectives of the child, like that the adults are gods and they have all the power and I only have meaning if they give me meaning. As an adult, part of my definition of a true adult is that you recognize effortlessly that you are self-validating. And the reason why it's effortless is because other aspects of actual adulthood are a constant awareness that's, again, effortless. It's not a psychological dilemma. It's the effortless awareness that we're all mortal. You never lose the awareness of mortality. So you stay humble, you stay alive. Whereas when we're in our fear-based soap operas, full of fear and expectation, we don't realize, but we have an attitude that we're immortal. It's like, I have all the time in the world to waste gossiping about other people, or, you know, I'm immortal, but we don't realize it. It's unconscious. But a genuine adult realizes the preciousness of life, that it could end at any moment. And that's not a psychological problem. It's just the nature. You accept life on its own terms, which means it's easy to recognize. No one has a right to judge. That when people are judging and gossiping and stuff, they're acting like they're immortal. They're wasting their precious life, their precious opportunities to connect with their gift of true being, which is full of joy and creativity. So that's confusion about adulthood. If you're in emotional states, if you're involved in hope and fear, jealousy, greed, building yourself up, putting other people down, or the reverse, building other people up, putting yourself down, you're not an adult. You're not behaving, you're not in your adult self. But people claim that they're adult all the time when they're acting like a three-year-old. So it's important to get rid of the confusion about what it means to be standing in your actual adulthood versus that you're acting like a child, but you're being deceived because you have a grown-up body. You look at your body and go, well, I'm an adult. But psychologically, you're not. How you're functioning psychologically, you're not. If you're being ruled by hope and fear and greed and shame and guilt, and that's all based on the naive, gullible, undeveloped mind of a child. And even though your brain has grown up, even though you have an adult brain that is not inherently gullible and naive, it's being ruled by all those gullible and naive programs from childhood because you haven't freed yourself from them. So, but the good news is it's not a struggle. It's just to wake up. You're an adult. You actually are an adult. You don't have to behave like a child. But that's the power of the negative hypnosis. What you said about projecting, you see something in present time, and instead of seeing it for what it is, you project onto it that it's very probably holding some proof that I'm not good enough, and so now I'm anxious about it. That's the gullibility of a child that has been told by the authority figures that things in the outer world or your behavior can determine whether you're worth loving and keeping alive. And that's a horrible delusion that's easy to put on gullible little children because they don't have the cognitive faculty to call it what it is. The technical term is bullshit. So The third thing is confusion about performance. Okay? Again, it's all aspects of the same thing. The root problem for all of us, the root problem, like I have a program about the 18 types of confusion. And I mean it in a very specific way because I've been practicing recognizing the hypnotic power of language. All language is inherently hypnotic. That's why we're in hypnosis all the time, but we don't realize it. So words are important. So the word confusion, which we all use all the time, but you got to stop and look at it because you can. It's a valuable tool. You have con, which means with. You all know that who are Spanish speakers. And fusion means pour together. So you get a state of confusion anytime you pour things together that don't go together. Like I have 18 categories, but the root category from which all the other ones arise is pouring together worth of being with judgment of activity. And that's what happens when we're a gullible child. 6 years is a long time. Several hundred times a day, several thousand times a month, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of messages that your being is only worthy according to your activity. And it's not simply your activity. It's how these big gods judge your activity. Again, what I said about the really nasty, insidious way parents can really just cripple their children is all these thousands of little messages that even if you do, if you make your bed perfectly, still not good enough. So the performance, the main confusion about performance is that performance determines your value. You want to break that confusion. In adult consciousness, you recognize being is absolutely pure and unassailable because it's a gift. We're all manifestations of being. There are no separate beings. They're separate bodies, but bodies are all about activity and behavior. They're all infused with life force, which is the same. A good metaphor or analogy is the ocean and waves. Billions and billions of waves coming and going, but they're not separate things. There actually are no waves. Waves is a noun. We're taught that nouns are things. There are no waves. There's the activity of waving. The ocean is waving. You can't see it and say, oh, what a beautiful wave. I'm going to scoop it up and take it home. You can't do that because it has no independent existence. It just appears to be independent. That's the same with us. We appear to be independent, but really we are the ocean of life force waving as each of us.
And it's beautiful how you put it, because one of the things that I always tell my patients when they are having worth issues is that I always remind them that, you know, it's like we are all so worthy, so worthy, so worthy that we've got life running through our veins, pumping our heart. You know, we've got the most beautiful and most amazing gift ever, which is being alive. Yeah. And we got that because we are that worthy. So it's beautiful the way in which you put it. And it also takes me to think about, you know, all of these psychological games where abuse of power is present, and also the business world sometimes has lots of this abuse of power present, and we like pick these games based on whatever we experienced before, and then our own like monkey mind starts talking in our heads, right? We're not good enough. We cannot do this. If I don't do this, then I will not receive this or be worthy of this or get a promotion or... You know, it's like, in a way, because everybody has this kind of wound, then it's like the world is built in this way. So it's beautiful what you're presenting to the world in your book, through this interview, and I'm sure it's going to be very useful for our listeners worldwide.
I'm curious how many of them, when they heard you say, we're so worthy, or your clients, how many of your clients, when they hear you say that, their immediate response is to object. I'm not worthy. What I want people to understand is when you have that response, It's because you're in this trance that your being is fused with your activity. And you're, when she says you're so worthy, you actually are contacting the judgment of your behaviors, and you have so many powerful negativities about that, you have a strong response, hey, I'm not worthy. That, so I'm just supposed to not care what I do? No, you still can have not worthy activity, but you separate. Your being is still worthy, even if your activity isn't worthy. Like, there's various levels of unworthy. Like, in the context of business, maybe you convince them to hire you for a job to pay you $20 an hour. But as you do that job for a week, they realize, you know, we won't fire you, but we're only going to pay you $10 an hour because your work isn't worthy of $20 an hour. That's fine. The thing is, no matter what the opinion about your activity is, you have a right to have absolute love, kindness, encouragement, and self-respect for your being. And if you're not doing well, you just encourage yourself. You remember that not doing well is not a personal issue. It's not a psychological issue. It's about cause and effect. You go, oh, I didn't do well. I guess there's something I need to learn about this process in terms of cause and effect. And if I learn that, then I'll do better at it. It's how we learn everything. It's how we learn how to walk, how to talk, how to drive a car. You know, you practice learning how it works and you get better and better at it. It's not a personal risk. And then at a different level, it might be unworthy in that it causes harm. You want to have the strength of personal self-respect that if you cause harm, you fearlessly acknowledge it instead of running and hiding in guilt and shame or blaming somebody else, like Donald Trump. You acknowledge it. You feel remorse, genuine remorse, not guilt. You feel remorse, which passionately it motivates you to correct, to learn how to correct that harmful behavior. I didn't realize it was harmful. Now I do. I'm going to change it. There's no fear in that, because if you understand, your being is never at risk. So you fearlessly are able to recognize mistakes you make, whatever level they're at. But I'm sure many of you, most of you can recall from childhood, you very quickly learned to be afraid of making mistakes. How many of you were absolutely fearlessly, raise your hand, or the teacher says, who knows about blah, blah, blah. Everybody raises their hand, I do. No, you know, after maybe second grade, everybody just sits there. Not me. You're not going to target me. So this is crucial. This is the crucial. If you get this, everything else will loosen up and fall away. The reason your being is pure is because it's a gift. Like Luciana said, it's flowing through you. Life itself, moment by moment, is giving you the gift of conscious intelligence and light. You're not deciding to be able to see. You're not deciding to be able to hear. You're not deciding to be able to digest your food, beat your heart, on and on and on. It's all a gift. That's why your worth is unassailable. Doesn't belong to you. And everybody's getting the same gift. Nobody can stand on some higher ground and look down on it. I mean, we do that all the time, but that's the delusion.
Thank you so much, Jack, for having shared your wisdom, you know, all this experience that you have, and of course, your amazing book that's just now available on Amazon for all our listeners to go by running and reading it. So yeah. Thank you so much for being with us this
week. And remember, if you want to work with me personally or do my trainings, I'm getting older and older.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you about. So for those of our listeners who may want to contact you, maybe to get an autograph for the book, or maybe to learn something from you, or maybe in a private session, how can they contact you?
Probably the simplest thing is email me at jack@jackelias.com. Jackelias.com is one of my websites where you can connect. And it also links to my bigger training site, which is called findingtruemagic.com. Finding True Magic is my first book, and it's the hypnotherapy textbook for my courses. It's a big, wonderful book. So jackelias.com, findingtruemagic.com, or just email me at jack@jackelias.com. I've all Facebook stuff, all that other stuff too, but keep it simple.
Thank you so much for being with us today. It has been a pleasure, and I really hope we can have you with us sometime soon again.
I agree. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Have a nice day. Take care and see you soon. Thank you, Jack.
No worries. No anxiety. No fear.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed today's interview. Now, I would like to share with you some positive affirmations you can use during this day. I choose to react positively to this situation. There is no past experience that can stop me from succeeding today. I remember there is no good or bad situation. As I relax and focus on my breathing, anxiety leaves my body and I regain clarity and peace of mind. I am safe. Our guest today has been Jack Elias, Master Certified Clinical Transpersonal Hypnotherapist, author of books like Finding True Magic and his most recent one, The Outrageous Guide to Being Fully Alive. He's offering an upcoming webinar about how to be emotionally resilient when success is not good enough and failure is not an option, with live classes recorded. This is his second visit here at Inner Healers. Our topic for this show has been dealing with the anxiety in your expectations. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. If you're into leading a healthy lifestyle, join us next Wednesday for more ways to bridge science and spirituality from a healthy standpoint.
You've been listening to Inner Healers, a radio show dedicated to sharing the latest news on integrative health, overall well-being, and spirituality. You can follow Inner Healers on Luciana's Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Join producer and host Luciana Stiglitz next week to remember you can heal from within. You are an inner healer.